Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and I'm very excited about today's show. Zina Del Lowe made a film. She's an actress, a writer, producer, director, screenwriting teacher, and she made this film, her most recent, Ragdoll, inspired by a true story. And it's about a woman married to a gay man, and it just blew me away, just the power of the film, the honesty in the film, the craftsmanship and all the levels of how it was acted, how it was written. It's been going around to different film festivals. And I'm really looking forward to having Zina talk about her film, but also in the big picture, her thoughts about writing, about the evangelical world. Perhaps we'll get into that and the involvement in the church and filmmaking. She's taught in some Christian writing programs, and she has in addition to her bachelor's degree in English, she's done a master's degree in apologetics, the defense of the faith at Biola University. So just a very multi-level person and a very interesting guest. So I'll be back in 20 seconds with Zina Del Lowe. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Zina. How are you?
Thank you. Yes, I'm good, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. That was so kind of you.
Oh, you're most welcome. When I started playing guitar in the bars as a kid, I remember a great, great performer told me, he said, kid, to really be believed, to really impact the audience, you have to be totally naked on stage. And, you know, as a kid, I thought literal. I thought, I don't know if I want to take my clothes off. But then, you know, he explained to me the metaphor of it. And then he said, and you also have to bleed on stage. And so I, you know, your film Ragdoll, the honesty, the vulnerability, I was so moved by it. And whatever you're comfortable sharing
Thank
about
you.
The background of this film and your own experience and how you ended up making this film about a woman married to a husband
married
she discovers is gay. Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, yes. So actually, Ragdoll is based on a true story, my story, actually. It's not true in, like, every single detail is true. It's just inspired by my true story. I was married to a gay man for 8.5 years. And the problem is that when we, in our society today, when you have a man who comes out of the closet or who, you know, ends up embracing what he sees as who he really is, we are conditioned in our society to applaud him and to be like, that's awesome, oh my goodness, or to have sympathy with the man. We're just kind of conditioned to really feel bad for that person. And we don't think much about the woman. We don't think much about, well, what about her? How did that affect her? What kind of damage did that do to her? So what ended up making me want to write Ragdoll is that I wanted to tell the woman's side of the story, and I wanted to show the destruction that happens to a woman who happens to be married to a gay man. And that was where the story came out of. But to do that, it required a lot of rawness, as you say, and also, you know, what I've been criticized by a lot of Christians because it is pretty, I don't want to say shocking, but it has elements of shock factor in it without, I think, violating my audience. I've avoided that. Nevertheless, I had to do that to get my audience out of the man's naturally sympathetic point of view. They had to see it from the woman's point of view, and so that meant that I had to do some things creatively to sort of shift gears, if you will.
Mm. You used the words damage, destruction. One of the scenes that really got me was, you know, you come out wanting to make love to your husband, and you look so beautiful. You have the candles, and you're in a nightgown, and here he can't really make love to his wife. And when you talk about damage and destruction, was it to the self-esteem? Was it you know, your feeling as a woman? Did the question come through your head? Is it me?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's very much a part of what happens. I think that very few people, thankfully, can relate to the idea that you're being rejected at some sort of core level of your being. You know, like, I can't help being a woman. It's how God made me. That's how I've been created. And so to be rejected at that female core, it really plays tricks with your mind. Even once you figure out why, it still plays a trick with your mind. And, you know, I'm happy to say that now in my life, at this stage in my life, I'm very happily remarried to a husband who doesn't reject any part of my core. And yet, my current husband, there have been times where even now, we're about to have our 9th year anniversary, and even now there are things that will come up where
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. It's wonderful. But there are times where something will happen that will sort of trigger a response in me that is not consistent with whatever the situation is. And then as we unpack it, I'll realize, oh, I'm going back to that natural defensive stance or that fear of core rejection because I lived with it for so long. It's incredibly pervasive. And that's why I thought the woman's side of the story had to be told. There's nobody talking about that.
You know, another thing I took away from this film, and by the way, those of you listening were interviewing Zina Dello, a very talented actress, writer, director, producer, about her film Ragdoll. A woman in the film is married to a gay man. And by the way, her website is missionranchfilms.com if you want to see the film eventually. It's now going through the festivals. And congratulations, by the way, on the awards at the different festivals. Best Short Louisiana International Film Festival, Official Selection Portland Film Festival. It was out here right down the street from us at the California Women's Film Festival. I got the feeling in the film, Zina, that as you were trying to seek help for your marriage, your first marriage to a gay man, that these sincere efforts ended up getting some bad advice that was not really all that helpful, particularly in the religious context. What's some of the maybe bad advice that you got, or the, you know, here you are trying to solve the problem, and you're being given some, you know, not very helpful solutions.
Well, okay, so you're picking up on something that's actually a very important aspect of this movie. When I did this movie, the last thing I wanted to do was, I am not trying to take a political stance or a religious stance on whether or not it's right or wrong to be gay, you know, any of those things. Even though I do have opinions on those, I deliberately and specifically and intentionally left them out of this film, because this film was not about that. So I didn't want to demonize my male character. He's not the big bad guy who is ruining this woman's life. What ended up happening as I was developing the story is I realized a very real part of her destruction is the lie she tells herself about love, and that she's complicit then in her own destruction, which I consistently see women doing. We tend to tell ourselves things like, well, hey, you know, he saved me, so the least I can do is save him back. Or, boy, if we really love each other, we can get through anything. Or, and in my particular case, being married to a gay man, even my ex-husband never said he was gay. He would call it, I struggle with same-sex attraction because I have some damage, but I don't want that. That's not who I am. I can get over this. We can get through this. And so as a woman, you tend to think, okay, yeah, if I just love him enough, we really love each other. We're best friends. So surely we can make it through this. And those were the lies that she was telling herself.
Powerful. It's amazing how much you pack in this short film, because that's a really important component. You know, I have gay friends that went to ministries, you know, to try to kind of pray away the gay, so to speak, and end up you know, the male counselors there are molesting them, hitting on them, and it, you know, this idealistic thing that that issues, you wave a magic religious wand and everything's fine. And speaking of the religious part, you mentioned earlier that some Christians criticized you in terms of this film. What were some of the religious criticisms that you received?
Well, okay, for one is that I specifically left religion out of the film. You know, this isn't, not that, I still believe it's a biblical worldview, don't get me wrong. In fact, I believe it's a very biblical worldview. It's just that my characters are damned. I'm damning my characters in order to redeem my audience. So I had one gal say, I don't even understand as a Christian how you could even make this film. It is the most depressing, hopeless film I've ever seen. Now, she went on to say, I watched it 5 days ago, and in 5 days, I haven't been able to think about anything else. Well, to me,
well,
I'm already doing the victory dance, because that's exactly right. That is the goal, is to make people think about these issues and jangle them up a bit. We need to be jangled up sometimes for us to really have a new truth revealed to us.
Well, I can't think of a greater compliment, because, you know, these, you know, $200 million hardware movies with an explosion every 5 seconds come to the you know, megaplex at the mall, the Cineplex, and, you know, a few days later, people forget them. And here you made this film, which I think you raised the money on Kickstarter, right?
I did. Yep, I had a Kickstarter fund. It's only a 9.5-minute film.
Yeah,
and
9.5 minutes.
And I do have a lot of people say, it's amazing how much was packed in the 9.5 minutes.
Well, it's really stayed
with
me.
So you're right, yeah.
It's really stayed with
Thank
me, too.
You.
What do you mean by damn your characters to redeem your audience?
I mean that, so here's what a lot of people in the Christian world tend to think makes something a, quote, Christian movie. If there's no sex, no language, no violence, and B, if it has a hopeful, what they consider redemptive ending. So if you write something that has no redemption, well, then they tend to think that you're not, I mean, that's not, you can't be a Christian, because we're always talking about hope and all those things. And my response to that is that no, there is room for despair, for hopelessness, for no redemption in God's economy. I mean, if you are a Christian and you believe in, you know, that you only have one life and after this comes judgment, well, if you believe in hell, then that means there are people that potentially won't have a second chance. So I think we have to leave room for hopelessness in God's economy. The question is, did the characters have an opportunity to, you know, are they predestined to that destruction, or did they have an opportunity to repent? And if they had that grace given to them but they rejected it, I think that's very consistent with the world as we see it. People have opportunities all the time to repent, but they choose not to. So, yes, I damn my characters. They had opportunities, but they didn't take them. But I'm hoping that it will cause my audience to make a different choice. It's like Romeo and Juliet did the same thing. The idea is, hey, these characters are damned. You, the audience, go out and don't do what they did. Learn from their mistake.
You know, another part of this film, to me, is like a snapshot of time. And, you know, it doesn't mean they're damned forever either to me. Like, I mean, in your case, you found love and have a wonderful new husband and celebrated your 9-year anniversary. And, you know, and God's not finished with husband number one in terms of his, you know, story. So, you know, you're so
well,
right that
I
evangelicals.
Guess I would say I have a different view on, I mean, those characters in their relationship. There was only one way for it to end.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a damned relationship. Mm-hmm. But yes, once we got out of that relationship, we both had endless possibility for God to, you know, restore the years the locusts had eaten away.
Mm. Well, you mentioned the aspect of Christian movies and everything. Tell us, you have been a teacher and still teach at Covenant College and various places. Tell us about how you got involved in the Christian screenwriting program teaching at Act One, and tell us about that, because that's been a very interesting program and with a mission to take people of faith and try to make them the best writers that they can be. How did you get involved in the program initially and in teaching in the program?
Well, I actually applied for Act One the second year it was in existence, and I was accepted, and so I, of course, went through the program. I started out in Hollywood as an actress, but I found out that I was a writer. But I didn't have any formal training. And Act One is a training program for Christians who want mainstream Hollywood careers. I mean, I don't want to write quote Christian films. In fact, I have a real issue with that idea, but we won't go into that today. Nevertheless, I went through the program, and then maybe a year or two after that, I ended up being hired as the associate director of the program and helped develop the program for several years. And it was through that that I ended up teaching at writers' conferences and, of course, the Covenant job that came along. But the idea behind Act One is that there is a problem in the church in general, and that is, and I see this with my students all the time, they want, because we're Christians, we tend to want to do something important, of course. We want our art to mean something, but we make the mistake of thinking that in order for it to mean something, it therefore has to somehow evangelize or preach the gospel or try to win people over for Jesus or beat people on the head with some biblical truth, instead of it just has to be a good story. So everything from my students initially is always just so message, agenda-driven. It's propaganda, basically, and it's terribly difficult to try to get people out of that frame of mind where they just focus on a story and trust that whatever their worldview is, it will come out in the writing.
Yeah, it seems like the evangelical world is very utilitarian, that they judge films, like you say, by does it achieve the purpose of preaching this message, winning souls, redeeming people. In Genesis, God says the tree is beautiful and good for fruit, but it's first beautiful. And so your view is that let's do the best stories, the most beautiful, well-written stories we can, first and foremost. What did you learn? What hit you at first when you took this program? What were some of the main things that fed your soul when you first took it as a student?
Oh, boy. You know, I'd almost rather just say what are some of the things that I've learned since then as I've applied my craft and gotten better. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I would say about that is that I have learned that when you are telling the truth, the whole truth about who you are as a human, who your characters are as a human being and all their complexity, truth automatically leads to God. And that's why I think people don't have to be afraid that their worldview maybe isn't coming through or whatever, because the truth of the matter is, when I'm really telling, and Ray Dahl, you know, it's so raw, it's so honest about what my character is experiencing, and because of that, it automatically causes a person to think either inward or upward, and both of those, I call being a writer pre-evangelism, because if I can get somebody to think either inward about who they are as a human being, and reflecting on their flaws, their weaknesses, their needs, their wants, their desires, or if I can get them reflecting on, man, upward, meaning not Jesus saves, but rather, man, there is something bigger here that I want. There is something bigger in this world. There's something mysterious that I don't understand. I have done my job of pre-evangelism because all truth ultimately will lead to God.
Well, I tell you, you've sort of done a very, very truthful film here with Ragdoll, and I think it's a good example of what you're talking about, that, you know, Jesus said that his followers were to be a light in the world, to not hide their light under the bushel, and yet there's become this subculture of, oh, Christian movies, Christian music, Christian this, Christian that.
Yes.
What's your thoughts on that whole sacred, secular dichotomy of Christians kind of creating their own subculture?
I hate it. I tell you, I hate it. Did I mention I hate it? And I hate it for two reasons. I hate it on one hand because what tends to happen then is that Christians are not creating art that is as good as it needs to be to compete in a secular market. And so we need to be even more excellent at the craft. And instead, we're settling for mediocre art because we're preferring message over art. And I just think that's always a mistake, because the most profound messages are in the most profound art. So we're just dumbing down things. And then the second thing that's happening is that where's our saltiness? I mean, my goodness, if I want to reach people and I'm an author, why would I want to be sold in books at a Bible bookstore instead of in, you know, Barnes & Noble for anybody? I mean, I just think we need to be reaching culture, and that's how we're the culture influencers, is if our stuff is in actual culture and not just a subculture. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, that's just my two cents. I just think it's problematic on those two fronts.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, the Bible bookstore then becomes preaching to the choir, or the Christian films showing just at the churches. Or they do this trick and they think it's so clever. Let's get our church to buy out the whole theater and fill the theater with our mega church members and trick Hollywood into seeing all these tickets bought. And once again, it's just... you know, it's like a pastor, I think Mark Driscoll, you know, made his book a bestseller by, you know, getting the big mega churches to all buy it. But it's like not really playing in the major leagues. It's like playing in our own separate little league, you know. It's
yeah, and if you have to play the God card, you're not good enough to be in the game.
Wow, that's a powerful, powerful thought. So you're an actress and a writer. You came out as an actress, discovered you were a writer. But, you know, the great thing is that you've been able to write yourself some great parts as an actress. You are very good acting in this Ragdoll. Wow, are you great as an actress, too?
Thank you. You know, ironically, I probably would have, because I did direct Ragdoll, which was my primary interest. I knew that to tell the story the way I needed to tell it, I had to be the one who directed Ragdoll. And I'm in Montana. So the truth of the matter is, I would have, if I had lived in Hollywood, I probably would have hired one of my girlfriends to act in it, so that I could just focus on directing. But with the little budget that we had, and there as limited options as we're here, that's why I ended up being in Ragdoll as well. But I'm ultimately really glad I was, because there was something sort of cathartic in it to be able to actually have to reenact that story in a way. It was it was nice closure for me.
Yeah, I think it
so
was
it worked
healing.
Out good.
Yeah, it's psychologists do psychodrama too sometimes to help us heal from traumatic things in our past to reenact them. And plus, what a performance. You broke my heart. You know, when you look up in your nightgown to the husband, like, love me, I'm giving myself to you, you break my heart. You were great.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And here's a little irony about that, is that a lot of people didn't get it. They, even my composer, who did a terrific job, by the way, but we actually had a little argument over that particular section, because I wanted the music underneath to be so just haunting and eerie and suspenseful, because it takes the wife everything that she has to be able to offer that to her husband in after the counseling session they just had. And so my composer just felt like, oh no, it's just this beautiful scene, and you know, it doesn't go bad until he's unable to perform. And I'm like, no, from the very moment that scene starts, it should break our heart, because she's trying so hard to give him everything that she is, and he can't take it. And so, you got it, and I'm glad that you got it.
Oh, it's a very, very vulnerable piece of work, and I'm so glad that you're not making them quote-unquote Christian movies in the legalistic sense, because Christians are so afraid of any kind of sexual content or theme. And, you know, at the core of this film is that she's offering herself sexually to her husband, and he can't receive that. And that breaks the heart.
Yep.
You had the courage to go there, and, you know, Christians, you mentioned, don't like sex, language, or violence, although I think they tolerate violence a little bit more in their movies than sex.
Yes,
but sex,
yes.
Sex, particularly in certain conservative areas of the church, I mean, homosexuality is the thing they love to hate. So here you have a film about a gay man and a sexual problem, a sexual dysfunction. So you're a gutsy girl, Zena.
Thank you. And that was tricky. It was a very tricky element to deal with, in part because I needed to, I had to show it. The defining characteristic of marriage is sex. I mean, I can be roommates with anybody and be very good roommates, but if I'm married to somebody, I can even be good friends with somebody. But if I'm married to somebody, what defines our relationship is that we have sex. And so I had to deal with the sexual element. That's also where so much rejection comes from. And so it had to be there. But at the same time, I didn't want to be gratuitous. But I had to show enough that we weren't thinking, well, no wonder he's gay. I mean, look, she's disgusting. Or, yeah, she's a cold fish. Or any of those things where we naturally try to blame the woman in a lot of circumstances for things that go wrong. So it was a very, very tricky element for me to incorporate. And I'm really, you're making my day by pointing that out, because you nailed it. That was the hardest thing. And I think that the filmmaking team as a whole, that we did nail that pretty good.
Yeah, your crew and cast were all fantastic. And as beautiful as you looked in that scene, he had to have been gay to reject you.
Thank you.
You know, and
it was
nuanced too, I have to say, Zena. One thing that I really appreciate in the beginning of the film that was very nicely done was that you did show that this, you had a nice connection with him, you know, and that he was
exactly
not Darth Vader, he was not Satan, that he had some really good qualities, because I felt like there was a love there in the opening minutes of the film and a connection between the two of you.
That absolutely had to be there, because it's true. There was love, a lot of love. There still is. I mean, I'm still on good terms with my ex-husband, and, you know, I care about him a great deal. So the love was a very important thing that needed to set the tone of the piece, because otherwise, if there was no love, nobody would ever stay and try to work out that scenario anyway.
Well, I don't know where the time has gone. We have like a minute left. Is the best place for people to keep up with you at missionranchfilms.com?
Yes, absolutely. And they can actually sign up for a mailing list. That there's a way to sign up on the last page, contact me page. They can sign up for our mailing list, and they'll get updates about upcoming projects, and they'll be notified when Ray Dahl will be available to watch to the public.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I feel kind of lucky, and I'm sorry to my listeners it's at the festival circuit right now, but you'll be able to see it soon. Keep up with missionranchfilms.com. Well, you enjoy the snow and the winter weather there in Montana, Zena, and blessings to you and your husband, Zach.
Thank you. thank you so much for having me on the show. You're awesome, Richard, and I adore you. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. And thank you to all of you for listening. Go with God and be blessed.